I already have a dedication from the start of the call. Shlema for Mordechai David ben Esther. And God willing, hope to hear good news. Anybody else?
Yes.
Yeah.
Even though our esteemed chairman, Brian Kleinberg, I don't see him on Zoom, he celebrated the 50th Bar Mitzvah anniversary.
Ooh.
This past Shabbos, so I'd like to dedicate this chair in his honor.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Okay. That is an excellent cause as well. Okay. So we are on Ches Amud Beis, 8b. And in the course of concluding, Reish Lakish's five statements, at least four of which were brachot, at the Shiva for Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba's son. And remember again how we got into this morbid discussion. We were talking about Sheva Brachas and everything was lovely. But we talked about how the Chasan may count towards the Minyan. We talked about that. And that got us, you know, into a conversation about whether the Avel, or the mourner, counts towards the Minyan for this Birkas Rechava, the Bracha that would go on, after the funeral, and then again through the week of Shiva, if there are Panim Chadashos, if new people show up. And then we brought this illustration of Reish Lakish being the new face to console Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. So we saw the first three. One was about the loss of a child, and then the second one was about praise of God, and then the third one was about mourners. With that notable line of many people have already experienced this, many people will, and Abaye saying, hey, don't say that. And that brings us to the fourth of the five. If you're using your own Gemara, you want to see where the lines get wide and go up about eight lines. I'm going to share the Bar Ilan Gemara on my screen. So you'll be able to see that. It is... There we go. So I'm just going to move that over there, and we're good. So the fourth statement is right here, Amar le kum ema milsa. Like I said, if you see where the lines get wide, and then you go up eight lines from there. Amar le, Reish Lakish says to his spokesman, kum ema milsa keneged menachme avelim. Let us speak opposite those who come to comfort mourners. Let's say something for the comforters. Pasach va'omar, and he began and said, Achenu gomle chasadim b'nei gomle chasadim. Our brothers who perform acts of kindness, the descendants of those who perform acts of kindness, hamachzikim bivriso shel Avram Avinu, who hold on to the covenant of our ancestor Avraham. I'm skipping the words in parentheses, but I'm actually going to come back to them. Achenu bal hagmul yishalem lachem gmulchem. Our brethren, may the one who rewards pay you back for this chesed that you are performing. Baruch ata mishalem hagmul. Blessed are you, God, who pays reward. So it is a call for God to reward those who perform chesed. So the words that are in parentheses are skipped. As a general rule, when you read Gemara from a standard Vilna Shas, the assumption is that when you see words in brackets, they're meant to be included. When you see words in parentheses, they're meant to be excluded. That's a general rule, and you will always find exceptions. But on this point, there's even a note in the margin you could see, Sfar Macherim Eino, that in some texts the words in the parentheses don't appear. But I want to call your attention to them. We talk about people who give chesed, holding on to the covenant of Avraham, and we quote a pasuk. This pasuk is from Bereishis, Perek Yud Ches, chapter 18, and in it, Hashem is about to tell Avraham what he's planning for Sodom. And he says about Avram, ki yedativ, either because I know him, or as Rashi renders it, because I love him. Leman asher yitzaveh es banav es beiso acharav. He is going to instruct his children and his household after him. Vishamaru derech Hashem. They will guard the path of God. Lasos tzedakah u'mishpat. To perform tzedakah and mishpat. So this text thinks, the part that's in parentheses, thinks that that's the source for identifying Abraham as a person of chesed. Because Hashem says he's going to teach his children to perform tzedakah and justice. Now I want to show you Rashi. Rashi on this says, Bevriso shel Avraham, the covenant of Avraham, Shegamal chasadim, he did kind things, Dichsiv, as the pasuk says, Vayita eshel, he planted an eshel, and then the text goes on to say he called in the name of God on that spot. Rashi Tevos, the initials for Eshel are Achila Shesia Levi, eating, drinking, escorting, meaning he would take care of guests on that site. So that's how we know that Avram is a person of chesed. So our Gemara has this text, which is in parentheses, that says, you know Avram does chesed because the pasuk says that he's going to teach his descendants to perform tzedakah and mishpat. Rashi chooses to give you the pasuk with the Eshel. So I'm going to stop sharing for a moment, which I guess is counter being a descendant of Avram who does chesed, but don't worry, I'll share later. The question that I have for you is this. Why doesn't Rashi like that pasuk? The pasuk that says Avram is going to teach his descendants to perform tzedakah and mishpat. Why doesn't Rashi like that pasuk? Why does Rashi choose Vayita Eshel, which requires that I take the word Eshel as an acronym? Yes. Yeah.
So that might not be the best source.
Right. So I would go one step further. What does the word tzedakah mean?
Justice.
Right. The problem is that we have this word tzedakah that doesn't have to mean the way we use the word tzedakah, which is to say charity, philanthropy. Tzedakah can mean justice. And in fact, if you look at the Torah Tamima on that pasuk, he references our Gemara in this discussion. But I think tzedakah can be taken as justice. So maybe that's why he doesn't like that pasuk and chooses instead Vayita Eshel, which of course has a medrash that explains planting the Eshel as a reference to hosting people. The only problem I have, well, I have two problems. Problem number one that I have is that Rashi in Micha, chapter 7 of Micha, when we talk about tzedakah there, Rashi translates the word tzedakah as chesed. So Rashi does believe the word tzedakah can be translated as chesed, not necessarily as justice, as tzedek. The other problem I have with it is that really there was a much better case that he could have brought.
Yeah,
why didn't we bring hosting the visitors? Right? Three people by the tent, it's after his bismillah, he goes running out, he's talking to God, and especially within the version in the Medrash that says that he turns to God and says, God, wait a minute while I go take care of my guests. Right? Like, why wasn't that our basis for Avram being a person of chesed? I don't know why Rashi goes for Vayita Eshel. I'm confused. I understand why you don't use the pasuk ki yedativ, but I don't understand why you choose the Eshel example when you have a much more explicit example in Avram hosting these three travelers. No, but I'm not asking on the Gemara, I'm asking on Rashi. I'm asking why Rashi brings me the Eshel example. I don't understand why he needed that. It's just...
Because they were angels and didn't actually either bring anything.
But Avram doesn't know that. I mean, that's pretty clear in the text, that Avram has no view. If he thinks they're angels, he really doesn't need to make Sarah, you know, put all the food out. There's a limit, okay? You could do something pro forma just to make sure there's something, you know, put out jelly beans, but you don't need to offer them food. So I just, you could argue that Vayita Eshel represents an ongoing thing, and that was only a moment in time. Maybe you can make that argument. I don't know. So this is, but this is the fourth of the brachos. It's for those who comfort mourners, and we say that by doing so, you are emulating Avraham. And then we come back to the Gemara for the fifth of five, in which we see, scrolling down here, a plea. It is, if you see where the lines get wide and go up five lines, Amar Lei, Reish Lakish says to his speaker, Kum Ema Milsa Keneged Kol Yisrael. Let's say something for all Israel. And this is actually a tefillah. This is a prayer. What does he say? Pasach Ve'Amar, Ribon Ha'olamim, Master of the Universe, Pidei Ve'Hatzel Malet Hosha, four verbs, redeem, rescue, Malet is also to rescue, to get them out from where they're in trouble. Hosha, save, Amcha Yisrael, Min HaDever, Umin HaCherev, Umin HaBiza, Umin HaShidafon, Umin HaYerakon, from plague, from sword, from being despoiled by enemies. Shidafon and Yerakon are plagues that befall your crops. Umikol mine puranios hamisragshos ubos lo'olam. And from all punishments that come into this world, save us from all of this. Terem nikra ve'ata sa'anet. Even before we call out, Hashem will respond. Baruch ata otzer hamagefa. Blessed are you, God, who halts the plague. The Marsha notes that the different hazards that are listed here are unusual. So what we're asking for is to be saved from unusual forms of harm. That concludes the five items from the Sheva House. We have one more piece, though, one more unit here before we can leave the case of the Sheva House. And this is about drinking in the Sheva House. Just a quick show of hands. Has anybody here been to a Russian Shiva? So I remember the first time in my first shul when I was in Rhode Island, where after the funeral, my practice was that I would bring the Sudas Havra to the family to give them the bread and eggs meal. So, we come back to the house after the funeral and they had a table filled with alcohol. They told me that was a Russian custom. There was vodka, of course, but there were a whole bunch of other things that they had out on the table, and that was what they that was a Shiva practice of theirs. Well, they've got nothing on what we're about to see in the Gemara. Based on the context, the practice we're about to describe seems to be something that was done after the funeral at the Birkas Rechava. And then again, any time you had 10, along with Panim Chadasho, somebody new, in the course of the Shiva. And essentially, it was an opportunity for the mourner to drink. That was really what it comes down to, which sounds coarse, but you'll see what I mean as we read the Gemara. So I'm going to share the screen again. We are on the last of the medium lines. Tana, before that, Amar Ula, beginning of the line. Ula said, Ramila b'masnisa Tana, some had it in a braisa. Asara kosos tiknu chachamim bebeis ha'avel. The chachamim enacted 10 cups of wine in the mourner's house. And again, this is specifically, based on what Rashi's language, it's very clear, is specifically for the mourner to drink. Why are we having the mourner drink 10 cups of wine? So I refer you to Rashi. I'll scroll up so we can see it there. And there's the birthday boy joining in. We'll just give him an opportunity to get settled before we sing him happy. No, we're not going to sing him happy birthday. Where is he? I have to find him on the screen. There he is. Hey, happy birthday, Brian.
Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you so much. Sorry to join you late. Just coming from my
minion. Sure. Okay. We're not going to make you give your bar mitzvah speech again. Don't worry. Okay. Asara kosos, Rashi says, 10 cups, laharbos lo bishasiya, to increase his drinking. Kidich siv, as the pasuk says in Mishlei Perek Lamed Aleph, tenu shechar la oved v'yayin lamare nefesh. give sheikhar, intoxicating drink, to the one who is lost, and wine to those of bitter spirit. This, in context, is the beginning of the chapter. If you remember the 31st chapter of Mishlei, what's it most famous for? What is the last chapter of Mishlei famous for? Yeah, that's Eish Yisrael. So this is right before Eish Yisrael. King Lemuel, we understand to be Shlomo, is receiving instruction from his mother, from Bathsheba. And Bathsheba first says to him in the opening passage in that chapter, you should make sure to take care of the needy, and you should not indulge in drink. Give drink to people who are suffering. Give drink to the ones who are lost. Give drink to the ones who are bitter spirit. It's not for you. Don't run after women. And then you go into what kind of woman he should seek. And that's the Eish Yisrael poem. There's much more to be said, of course, about that. I'm only mentioning it because Rashi mentioned it here. But the point is that it's specifically here about the Avel drinking, because the Avel is suffering. So you have 10 cups of wine enacted for the mourner. So the Gemara explains that it's 10 cups, shlosha kodem achila, 3 before eating, kedei liftoach es b'nei me'av, to open up his innards, build up his appetite a little bit, shlosha besoch achila, 3 during the eating, kedei lishros achila shebimeav, to soak the food that's in him. I'm guessing digestion, but I don't know. Ve'arba'a la'achar achila. And 4 more after eating. Why are we doing 4 more after eating? What are you accomplishing with these additional beverages? Echad k'neged hazan. So one of them he drinks at the bracha of hazanes hakol. Ve'echad k'neged birkas ha'aretz. One at al ha'aretz v'alamazon. V'yechad k'neged bonei Yerushalayim, one at the bracha bonei Yerushalayim, meaning he's actually drinking, punctuating each bracha. V'yechad k'neged hatov v'ameitiv, and one at Yechasreinu, one at hatov v'ameitiv. So he is going to drink 10 cups of wine. So says Ula. However, he's not done. Ula says, Hosifu aleihem arba'a. They added 4 more, because 10 really isn't enough. Echad k'neged chazanei ha'ir. One for the chazanim of the city. Chazanim here does not mean the cantor. It's not that the mourner hears the cantor and decides he has to go drink. Rather what we're saying, as I scroll up in Rashi, tiknu lahem bracha alav. They made a bracha for the chazan. Lefisha hayu shamashei ha'ir lehis asek b'meisim u'b'sha'ar tzarchei tzibur. These were people who got involved in burying the dead. They could have been the Chevra Kadisha, as well as other needs of the community. In other words, the term chazan isn't the term for the person who davens for the yamud, who leads davening. Chazan means somebody who's taking care of things within the community. So that's a bracha for the chazan, a cup of wine, I should say, for in honor of the chazan. These are still being drunk only by the mourner. V'echad k'neged parnasei ha'ir, one for the parnasim of the city. And the parnasim, as Rashi explains, were people who would fund funerals for those who couldn't afford it. V'echad k'neged beis hamikdash, one of them for the beis hamikdash. And Rashi says, asking Hashem to comfort us for the loss of the beis hamikdash by rebuilding it. And finally, v'echad k'neged Rabban Gamliel, one for Rabban Gamliel. And that we'll explain in a little bit. However, Ula says, Hischilu hayushosin umishtakrin. When they went to 14 cups, they found that people got drunk. The mourner could handle 10, but 14 was a little much. Hechziru hadavar liyoshna, and so they went back to, instead, doing 10 cups. They decided, you know what, we can make do with 10, and don't worry about not making a bracha for the chazan. Thoughts on this? 10 cups of wine in the Beis Avel. Does this strike you as a little strange?
A little
strange, no? Like I said, there is such a thing. There are customs, like, you know, of having drinking going on in a Shiva house. But this does seem to be a little extreme. So first of all, you might ask,
yeah. Wouldn't the wine back then much weaker than the wine we have today?
So I'm going to talk about that in a moment. I'm going to come to that. That's a good, good question, whether it's weaker or stronger. Well, we're going to come back to it. Hang in there. It's a very good question. I just wanted... I wanted to note one other thing first. How many people here learned the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim? Right? The last parak. So what question naturally arises when you've learned the last parak in Pesachim? Well, yes, the last parak in Pesachim is fertile ground for questions. But specifically, the last parak in Pesachim has a discussion of zugos, of pairs. You're supposed to avoid pairs of drinks. So if you take a look on your sheet, at source Aleph on the sheet, I'm not going to share the sheet, but the Gemara in Pesachim says, Shosek hiflayim damo berosho. If a person drinks pairs of cups, his blood is on his own head. Meaning this is a dangerous thing to do. This appears to be related to Shadim. This is not like a rational concept. And Rav Yehuda then says, Emasai, when is that true? Bizman shala ra'a p'nei ashuk. If he doesn't go out to the market in between cups. Aval ra'a p'nei ashuk hershus biyado. But if you go out, go for a walk in between cups, you're okay. And then you get Ula. Amar Ula. Ula was the same one who was talking here in our Gemara. And he says, Asara kosos ein ba mishum zugos. He says, no, 10 or more cups are okay. I added the or more because that's Rashi's comment there. 10 or more cups will not affect you, but under this issue of having pairs of cups. And the Gemara says, that's based on what we say here about the mourner's house. How in the world would they have enacted 10 cups if it were a dangerous thing? So the Gemara in Pesachim actually asks the question and gives this answer. But now to the question that Ilan raises and that Rav Simi raises, which is how in the world, really our question is, how in the world are they drinking so much? Like, what in the world is happening at these Jewish Shiva houses? Eldon writes in the chat, I would be fast asleep when the long lost relatives and friends show up. They, yep. That could be true. So I would note the following. First of all, we have sources indicating that their wine was stronger than ours. The Mishnah in Brachos, which I brought you on the sheet in source Beis, says, Ein mevarchin al hayayin ad sheyitein lesocho mayim, divar Abeliezer. Abeliezer says you're not allowed to make a bracha on wine until you first dilute it with water. The Chacham say you can make the bracha and then dilute it. And then drink. But they were diluting it for sure. The only question is the rate. 2-1, 3-1, but they're diluting their wine. And not only that, but if you take a look at the Rambam on that, if you see the Rambam in source Gimel, commenting on the Mishnah, he says, V'haya yeinam chazak. Their wine was strong. It wasn't drinkable. It wasn't potable. Unless you first diluted it a lot. Rebbe Eliezer says you can't even make a bracha on it until you dilute it because it's not called wine at that stage.
Rabbi, maybe they were very small cups.
So I'm going to come back to that. It's a good question. Hold the thought. I just wanted to show you one other Gemara on this, and that's the Gemara Nedarim in Source Dalet. Amra hihi matronisa l'Rabbi Yehuda. There was a matron who said to Rabbi Yehuda, Morev v'Ravi, you teach halacha, you paskin shilos, but you're clearly drunk, because his complexion was so bright that she assumed he was intoxicated. So Amar la, he swore to her, Hemnusa biyadadahi itasa ita imna ele kidusha veavdalta va'arba kasa de pescha. He says, you should know, I don't drink other than kiddush, havdalah, and arba kosos. Notice he didn't mention Purim, by the way. He says, I only drink kiddush, havdalah, and four cups on Pesach. And yet, v'chograni tzid'i min ha-pesach ad ha-atzeres. I have a headache from Pesach to Shavuos, from the four cups. The chograni tzid'i, I have to bind my temples of my head from this headache that I get. So then why is it that my complexion is so radiant? Chochmas adam tayur panav. The wisdom of a person illuminates his face. So now, if the wine really is strong, and the Rambam certainly thinks so, what do we make of this? So I think there are three things to keep in mind. First of all, the wine that they're drinking in the base Avel is post-dilution. It could be that the wine was strong when it was raw, but by the time you have diluted it 2-to-1, 3-to-1, you're now much more towards the water side than you were before. I think that's point number one. Point number two, and this goes towards what Dov said, is there's no mention here of the shear for the kos. It doesn't say it has to be a revius. It could be you bring him out a little mini cup. Or it could be that you bring him a cup, and he drinks a little bit of the cup. He isn't bound to drink the entire cup. But number three, I've said this for a long time in a lot of different contexts. It for sure came up when we were learning Maseches Avodah Zarah. The argument can be made that their wine was actually low alcohol. And that when we talk about it being very sweet, being very strong, we mean that it was very sweet. Right? Those who know the ad from the Lower East Side, so thick you can cut it with a knife. So that could be what we're talking about here. Because, remember, your grapes start out having high sugar content. And fermentation converts the sugar into alcohol. So their wine may have fermented for a shorter period of time because you had a very hot environment. It had to travel a long trip to the fermentation site. And it's entirely possible that the heat halted the fermentation process and you were left with something that was so sweet they wouldn't want to drink it unless they diluted it with water. But it was not necessarily high alcohol. So that's also a point to keep in mind when you hear about all this drinking. But I think that just the basic point is it was diluted, and that we don't know the size of the cups, aside from my theory about the alcohol content of their wine. There was a lot of drinking clearly going on, whether it was 10 cups or 14. Clear?
Rabbi, just going back to the last Eric and Albert on the Zoom guys.
Yeah.
Why don't we ask this question about the Albert Post? In general,
so we say that because it's for a mitzvah. That's how you get into that, I think, in the Gemara, no? Because we have four cups at the Seder. I don't remember. I haven't gone through that Gemara in quite a while, but that would be my gut answer, is that I'm not worried about it because of that. You could also give the answer that you have a gap in between the kosos, right? The whole discussion about why we make a new bar priya gafen on the kosos ties into that. So it could be because you have the gap in between. That may be a part of it. But let me call up that Gemara and share it so we could actually take a look at it. Might as well. Those who weren't here in the beginning, we were talking about the possibility of when we're going to go back to learning together in person on Shabbos. But as long as we're not, we might as well take a look at the Gemara inside when I can share a screen.
Maybe that's some of the reason for Kushal and the Abra.
Only if you're drinking it.
Well, don't you have also flail shimurim, though? So you don't really have to worry about the shading and other things.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think it's a mitzvah issue, by the way, because why would there still be a problem in davening in a desolate, place, a horba?
Right.
For a mitzvah, it's still doing a mitzvah, you're still worrying about the shading.
Right, but I would argue that you can't compare shade practices. In other words, that which works, so to speak, for one practice may not work for others. That would be my answer. One second. Let me show you a bracha. No, our answer here is what I had thought from before. Look at the Gemara here, the bottom of Kuftes Amud Beis. The sugya began, v'lo yivchasu lo me'arba, you give the pauper no less than four cups. Heichi mitakni rabbanan midi da'asi bali de sakana. They ask, how could the rabbanan create the arba kosos, which could be dangerous? And they quote this idea of not doing things in doubles. And Amar of Nachman, Amar kra leil shimurim, points to, I think it was Mori who said that, the New Jersey Mori. The Leil Hamashumar Ubam and Amazikin. It's a night when we are protected. And Rava Amar Koshal Bracha Mitzdarif Letova. The Eino Mitzdarif Lera. Rava says Koshal Bracha, which we include in Birkas Hamazon, only joins for good. It can't join to cause harm. And Ravina Amar Abba Kasi Takinu Rabbanan Derech Chayrus. And Ravina says no, because they enacted these four cups as a manner of freedom. Kol Chad V'Chad Mitzvah Ba'ampe Nafshehi. Each one is its own mitzvah. So we were mechaving to all of the answers. We got all of them in here somehow. Okay? Alright. Now going back to the Gemara, because we had one piece that we did not finish up, which was this business of Rabban Gamliel. So going back actually to the Gemara in Ksuvos, the bottom. There we are. The Gemara asks, "My Rabban Gamliel," we're three lines up from the bottom. What's this reference to Rabban Gamliel? When you say he enacted, Ula said they enacted a coast for Rabban Gamliel. What was that about? Desanya, it's an important brisa. Barishona haisa hutzas hameis kasha lekrovav yoser mimisa so. There was a time when paying for the funeral was actually worse for the family than the death of their relative. Ad shumanichen oso uborchen, to the point where they would leave the body and flee, meaning it was so expensive and they couldn't afford it and it was a humiliation, so they would actually not even do it. Ad shaba Rabban Gamliel v'nag kalus be'atzmo, v'otziu b'chlei pishton, until Rabban Gamliel came along. And keep in mind what people say about Rabban Gamliel. People talk about Rabban Gamliel being, so haughty. Look at how he dealt with Rabbi Yoshua. But this is the true character of Rabban Gamliel here. What he did with Rabbi Yoshua has its own reasons and its own discussion for another time. But Rabban Gamliel's nature is very visible here. He's decreed, even though he was the Nasi, he said that he wanted that when he died, they should take him out in linen. Simple, plain linen. The Nagu Kolam Achrav Lahotzi Bichle Pishtan, and that became the universal practice, and that's the practice to this day, is that the Tachrichen, the shrouds that we use, are not supposed to be expensive. They're supposed to be very simple, very straightforward, very plain. We don't bury people in fancy suits. Amar of Pup. Sorry?
What did they do before Rabban Gamliel? How did they bury
him? Apparently in finery. Yeah. Amar Rav Papa v'ha'idna nahug alma afilu b'tzrada barzuza. Rav Papa says, today people will bury even in a canvas garment that's worth only a zuz. Rashi says a dinar. I'm not sure why Rashi likes dinar here over zuz. But the point is to bury in something very cheap, very inexpensive. I've known funeral homes, unfortunately, where they try to upsell people still. You know, even though we say it's supposed to be a plain wood casket, they'll say, yeah, but there's the mahogany one, and there's the one with the finish, and there's the one with, you know, whatever. This is not supposed to be a time when people have to spend a lot, so Rabbi Gamliel takes the lead himself, and in doing so, earns the gratitude of a nation.
Yes.
So they weren't using a coffin in his day. The coffins come in only later. They were burying, they would carry the body out on a mita, some kind of a litter, in the tachrich and in the shrouds, and they would put the body in the ground. There wasn't a box.
Which is how we do it now in Israel.
In Eretz Yisrael, correct. That's that's normally the way that it's done.
Was the burial practice in Babel different than it was in Eretz Yisrael?
Don't know. Why do you ask?
I'm wondering.
The big question in Babel is that in Babel you have a high water table, right? That comes up in the Gemara in a lot of different cases. The degree to which the land there is wet. I don't know if that might have affected things. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Don't know. So
it was mammon. It seems like it should be, Rashi should say what a great chesed they did.
Right. So mevazvez actually is a positive term. It's not related to bizayon in that sense. It's mevazvez your kesef means to spend freely. Yeah, it's to spend freely. Like, I'm a vazvez on a mitzvah, you vazvez yoser mechomesh or shlish or, you know, depending on what you're talking about. The, but it means to spend freely. That they would spend freely to bury the aniyim. That's the way I would read that.
Okay, I took it as wamdim is what I usually think of. This was mamon, you just...
Right. And look, one person spend freely is another person squander. Okay. So that concludes the morbid discussion of the Shiva house. Unless, Chuck, you were going to say?
I was just going to comment that even in Toronto, there are certain sects among us that when the body is buried, they take out the bottom of the wood casket.
Mm-hmm.
So that people should be buried without separation between them and the soil.
Yeah. Now, look, one of the very memorable things that I did in my rabbinic career was the time when I was invited, when I was in Allentown, I was invited to a casket maker to basically do hashgacha on the caskets to certify that they were being made properly. And they knew everything. They certified that they didn't operate on Shabbos. They showed me a peg that could be taken out when the casket went in for that purpose, Chuck, in order that there should be some contact with the earth. They, showed me how it was made. There's no metal in the casket. They're very machped. They had all this. They didn't require taking the bottom out. I didn't see any with a trap door. But they did have, where you could remove the pin. That's for sure.
I thought all of the coffins that are used nowadays in America, I don't know about Canada, that there is an opening through the bottom of the casket for that purpose.
So I don't know if it being universal. I don't know if it being universal, no.
I think in the Gesher of Time, he says if you don't do that, then you should at least take earth from the ground and put it in the coffin.
Right.
Because there is an Indian of being connected to the upper.
Yeah, no, and Chevra Kedisha, you know, often has a practice of putting earth, whether it's earth Meretz Yisrael or whatever, you know, of having earth there. Okay. So, the Gemara now is done with the Shiva house and returns us to our previous topic, which was the topic of Bia Rishona, first relations between the husband and wife. And we dealt, if you remember back that far, with the issue of Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, where the man has relations with his wife for the first time, and he claims that there was no hymen, there were no besulim. And that claim will have different ramifications depending on their exact circumstances. So if, when they got married initially, at the time of Kiddushin at any rate, her family claimed that she was a besula, her ksuba was set at 200 zuz, and now he says, but she wasn't a besula, so this could affect the amount that is due to her for her ksuba. But further, beyond those finances, if she was a besula at Kiddushin, and she's not a besula at Nisuin, that creates more significant problems. If something happened in between Kiddushin and Nisuin, and it was willing, then this will prohibit her from being with him. Meaning, we're not dealing with a case where there are witnesses. If there are witnesses that something happened, then you wouldn't be having a conversation about Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. But where there are no witnesses, nonetheless, if something happened and she was a willing participant, then it will prohibit them to each other. Even if she was an unwilling participant, if he's a Kohen, it could prohibit them from being together. Now, there's a whole other discussion to be had challenging his status as a Kohen and so on. I'm not going into that right now. I'm just presenting the fact that in the event that it was unwilling, but if he's a Kohen, it could create real problems. So here, what we're going to discuss is the prohibition for him to be with her if he claims that, in fact, there were no besulim. It's just his say-so. But the fact that he is the one saying it means that he has to take it seriously, legally. And that has repercussions for him. So let's take a look at the top of Tesemet Aleph. We're just going to start this. We only have a couple of minutes, but I want to begin it, and then we'll continue with it, God willing, next week. So at the top of, the very last words on Chesemet Beis, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar said, and now we go over onto Tesemet Aleph. Ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. If he says that it was open, there were no basulim, ne'aman la'osra alav. He is credible to prohibit her for himself. And as Rashi notes here, let's move this out of the way, Rashi notes here, ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzas, I'm sorry, ne'aman la'osra alav, ve'av alpi she'ena davar azeh yachal lehisbarer ela alpiv. Even though you have no means of confirming that what he's saying is true, all you have is his say-so, but legabe nafshe, habe mehemen l'shavye ale chaticha de isura. For himself, when he says, I believe it, that's enough to prohibit relations for them. Aval avsi the ksuba salo mehemen. It's not going to lose her the ksuba. The fact that he says this is not going to affect her ksuba. It's only going to mean they're prohibited now to each other, because he's claiming something happened after Kiddushin and before Nisuin. So the Gemara asks a question. Ve'amai, I don't understand. Sfek sfekahu, this is what we call a double safek, a double doubt. Because, number one, safek tachtav, safek ain tachtav. For all we know, whatever happened for her to lose her besulim, if there were relations with someone, could have been before Kiddushin. You have no way to know whether it was before or after Kiddushin. And if it was before Kiddushin, it does not prohibit her to him. Ve'imtim tzalomar tachtav, and even if it was after Kiddushin, safek ba'one, safek baratzon. Maybe it was willing, maybe it was not willing. So therefore, you have room to argue that she should be permitted to him, even though he believes there were no basulim. So the Gemara gives me two answers. Lo, tzricha be'eshes kohen. What we're talking about here is where he is a Kohen. And because he's a Kohen, whether it was willing or not is irrelevant. So that's what we are, that's what we're talking about here. Is where he's a Kohen, and that's why he's able to prohibit relations between them. The Iba Yisema, alternatively, Be'eshes Yisrael. I'll say it's where he's a Yisrael, not a Kohen. Ukgon de kabil ba avuha kiddushin p'chusim ibas gemel shanim v'yom echad. But it's talking about a case in which kiddushin took place a long, long time ago. Right now, he's 18 and she's 15 or 16 or whatever it is. But kiddushin happened when she was 3. So what? So if there had been anything that happened that cost the besulim, it had to be after she was 3, because the Gemara makes the assumption, we'll talk about it more again next week, the Gemara makes the assumption that if anything happens to the Besulim before the age of 3, they will grow back. And therefore, whatever happened now must have been after Kiddushin. So you've lost the suffix of maybe it happened before Kiddushin, you're down to only one suffix of maybe it wasn't willing, maybe it was, and therefore, they'll be prohibited to each other. I want to talk about that more. I brought you on your sheet, I'll mention it again next week, the Gemara in Kiddushin, which says explicitly, you are not allowed to do Kiddushin with a minor. It is 100% not supposed to be done, the Gemara in Kiddushin is very explicit. Nonetheless, if you did it, it's valid. And that would be the case that they are imagining here was where Kiddushin was done when she was that young. There's more to talk about with it, but I'm gonna hold it till next week. Some of us have to go to the Shkia Menchamarev, so I'm gonna pause there. Looking forward to next week, and as I said in the beginning when we were first getting